Anya's hopes of avoiding the bizarre public transportation system the next day were dashed when her cabbie, a black Panamanian, had refused to take her to the barrio where the address she was looking for could be found. He explained in eloquent and vigorous English and Spanish that that was no place for a nice American lady to be. She had thanked him for his concern, paid him off, and tipped him well for bringing her from downtown and set off on her own. 2 hours later, she found herself in what she hoped was the right neighborhood. She could have walked there, she guessed, in about a quarter of that time. As it was, she still had a walk of several blocks past garbage-strewn lots, sporting sundry ruins dissolving back into lush subtropical undergrowth, and of desperate government housing blocks, more closely resembling prisons than apartments, with slab cinderblock walls and razor tape tangles surrounding them. The rusting metal skeletons of derelict cars, some burned out, dotted the cracked and root-heaved streets like casualties of war. It reminded her of parts of Brooklyn. Large knots of young men with bodies the consistency and color of tropical hardwood slouched on the corners or perched on car corpses. Without even thinking about it, she changed course to avoid them when she could. Since coming into possession of the sword, she had found herself becoming far more solicitous to avoid potential confrontation whenever possible. It was precisely because she possessed such very final means of ending physical attacks. The sword's terrible power, the ease with which it carved human flesh and bone, rubbed her nose in the responsibility of carrying it. The best way to win a fight, she'd discovered time and again, was to ensure it never started. She had studied the body language of victims, so as to avoid it. She learned to assess her surroundings and who was in them, to recognize potential threats far in advance. For the most part, it wasn't particularly challenging. She found it kind of fun, actually. And she religiously did something a lot of people she'd talked to, in her surprise, really resisted. When she identified a potential threat, whether it was a pack of adolescent males or a dark bottleneck with lots of places for muggers and rapists to lurk, she'd go out of her way to avoid it. Many people, it seemed, would rather risk getting robbed at gunpoint, beaten, or worse, than be 90 seconds late for work. Perhaps not too surprisingly, it turned out that not-a-victim behaviors were pretty much what she'd done her whole life. That was simply the way she was. She made herself mindful of the habits and put a little more emphasis on them. So when she couldn't entirely avoid the rootless young pack predators, since the only way to do that would be stay out of this area completely, she made eye contact, smiled, and nodded. It was the same thing she always did with people on the street, even in New York City, where the response tended to be hostility or paranoia, if not both. If they continued to look at her hard, she kept smiling, but hardened it a bit, suggesting that if she was messed with, someone would wind up bleeding, and it wouldn't be her. She was effective at using her body language to warn people to avoid starting with her. As usual, nobody did. The apartment block where her hoped-for informant lived was one of the dreary many, neither the most desperate nor the most inviting. Abinicio Luján was a wiry little guy with a snub nose in the face of a wizened boy, short curly black hair, dusted with gray, and bandy legs. She saw why Guillermo described him as a monkey. His manner was less suspicious than she had expected. She anticipated Guillermo had called him to warn him to expect a visitor, and to give him a chance to disappear if he feared the contact was risky. She now realized one or more of the young men she'd passed on the stairs had almost certainly called him to warn him she was on the way. Luján, she judged, was probably a marginal type, even by the standards of this brutal and ugly place. But he, too, was part of the net. Two crisp U.S. 20s were enough to start him talking. He described the scene at the boathouse much as Guillermo had. The curious activity, the men with guns suddenly converging and going inside, the strange sounds, the screams. He didn't say how he happened to be creeping around the vicinity, undetected by the boathouse killers. Anya didn't ask. She didn't need to know.
So what happened next? Look, mister, you get the rest of the money when I get information worth paying for. Right now, I haven't heard anything to justify what I gave you.
Look, senorita, I'm putting myself way out on a limb telling you this. Those were some bad men there at the old harbor.
Good men don't usually shoot people down without warning. Even men as bad as the ones who got themselves killed. Listen, Mr. Lujan, you've already said enough to risk becoming a target. I'm making myself one by being here talking to you. So here's the deal. Tell me the rest, and I'll pay you more. Or you'll be in the same amount of danger without having as much spending money in your pocket when you take that little trip for your health.
Hey, you're pretty sharp for a gringa, senorita. I bet all the gringos run away scared from you.
Only when I show my teeth, Senor Lujan.
Okay. The killers, they come out of the warehouse. They were big men. Gringos, too. I don't speak the English good, but I understand it pretty right. All except one. He was a real skinny guy, dressed all in white. In a white hat and sunglasses. Real pale skin. He was the boss. I could see that. The others, they were all scared of him. Even though one of them could twist him in two. So they backed the truck up, like I said, and moved this big old crate off the front end loader into the back. They really had to fight with it, you know? And when it went inside, the truck sank down on its springs. It was heavy. Then the guy dressed all in white, he says, "The Solomon King ups anchor in 2 hours. Make sure that's aboard."
The Solomon King? Not the King Solomon?
No, I may not have heard right, but he sounded like that.
Anya set her mouth. She could sense he wasn't jacking her for more money. The way he was starting to rock and bounce on his toes, she could tell he was eager to get this over with and make good his escape.
Anything else?
Swear to the Virgin, senorita. They all got in cars and SUVs and drove away. After I was sure they were gone, I got the hell out of there myself, and that was that.
All right.
So, let me see. One of those trees. That will be $50.
In her 10th-floor room in the hotel, Anya sat cross-legged on the bed. She had her notebook computer propped on a pillow in front of her so its processor heat wouldn't burn her bare thighs. She was wearing shorts and a t-shirt and thoroughly enjoying the air conditioning after the day's exertions. Anya had made it to the Panama City Harbormaster's office an hour before closing. Ship departures were public records, so she had checked for the date of the boathouse massacre. The offices were brightly lit, well-organized, and well-run. The canal did too much business and was feeling too much pressure from potential competition and its own rising passage fees to be run any other way. Her heart had fallen into her now swollen feet when she found no vessel named either Solomon King or King Solomon. She took a deep breath and scanned the entries again. This time she spotted the name on a registry, Solomon Kane. When she'd gotten back to the hotel, she had sent out inquiries to her contacts around the world, none of whom were her Romanian acquaintance in Berlin. She didn't want to go to that well too often. A message popped up in the lower right-hand corner of her screen to let her know she had one new message. The subject line read, "Re, birthday party." The email address belonged to a college nerd friend of hers who now worked for a software development company.
"Picked up an image of a ship sailing from the Peace City Harbor at the time you gave me. Whoever knew a Robert E. Howard fan would name a Liberian-registered freighter?"
"You are such a dork, Frank. And I'm a total dork, too, for getting the reference."
"The bad news is that it's tricky to track a ship across the big blue Pacific without something like a keyhole bird targeted specifically on it."
"Great."
"However, the most recent image I can find confirms that, at least for now, your target's on a heading consistent with the self-proclaimed destination of Mati on Mindanao in the Philippines. I think I can keep tabs on it enough to confirm it's continuing to head the right way, as long as there isn't a storm."
"Right. No storms. In the Pacific."
Anya was going to need luck, or the artifact for which so many had died, whatever it was going to be lost to science. And into the hands of parties about whom all she could say was that they were evil.